Welcome to Authors of the Pacific Northwest, where we connect Pacific Northwest authors with new listeners and provide advice for aspiring authors on the business of writing. I'm your host, Vicki J. Carter. So, hi there, listeners. Thank you for coming back to the podcast this week. Today, I'm excited. We have Brittany Joy on the podcast. So, Brittany, how about you say hi to the listeners?
Hi, everybody.
So, Brittany, why don't you start us out by telling us first what state in the Pacific Northwest you live in?
Well, I am located in Oregon. I am not too far outside of Portland, but my family and I live in a suburb a southwestern suburb, but we live just outside of it. So we're in the country and we have lots of little animals running around and
lucky all that stuff. Got the critters.
Yes, lots and lots of critters.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. And so tell us a little bit, do you have a day job besides your writing career? Or are you fortunate enough to just be writing full time? Kind of give us a little insight about who you are, some background about you.
Sure. I would love to write full time someday.
Yes.
That is my goal.
Yes.
But I do have a full time job. I work in sales. I'm an account manager for a company that sells and manufactures and sells animal grooming products.
Oh, okay.
So I'm involved, as you'll see with my writing, there's animals galore in my writing as well. But animals tend to take over most parts of my life.
I love it. So you get the bonus of not only sales, but probably getting some great grooming products for your animals.
Yes. Yes. My horses, my dog, everybody has, is very well clipped.
Nice. That's the purpose of work, right? We got to have something to keep us going working in the day jobs because we really all want to write full time, I think.
I know. So it's really fun that I get to involve animals in my full-time job and products I'm passionate about because I would love to write full-time and that's definitely a goal at some point.
Well, why don't you share with the listeners and I believe your future readers that come to this podcast and are being exposed to you for the first time, share with us your titles because you have a couple of them and a little bit of background of those and also share with us the genre that it's in.
Sure. So I currently have three young adult books that are self-published, and I'm also contributed to an anthology, which is Horse Stories for the Holidays, and it's a book called Deck the Stalls, and then a lot of equestrian fiction authors contributed to that anthology as well. But two of my books are part of a young adult, I call it equestrian fiction. It's basically, stories for horse crazy girls of all ages, but, it's focused on young adults. And there's two books in that series and they're called the Red Rock Ranch books. So the first is Lucy's Chance and the second is Showdown. And then I am also working on a young adult fantasy series, and I have published the first book in that series right now. It's called Overruled, and I'm working on the second book in that series, Overrun. I am just about done with the first draft of that one.
Fantastic. Series are always the best. I hear, if you have a series, the first book will eventually sell better when the second one's out there. So
that's what I hear too. And I think particularly for fantasy too, people are really used to series in that genre too.
Yeah.
So they really look for multiple books versus just standalone novels.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to ask you the stumper question that seems to stump all authors. Well, some authors, because maybe they're not prepared for this one, but what would you like your future readers or our listeners to know right up front about you?
Okay. Well, I think that the most important thing for future readers to know is that all my books, at least up till this point, they all include horses in them.
Nice.
Yeah, and horses are a really big part of my life. I've been riding since I was little. So the Red Rock Ranch books are very horse-centered. But then my young adult fantasy series as well has some horse characters in it. And one of the main characters, because that book is written in dual perspective, mm-hmm. one of the main characters, she has a magical connection with horses.
Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah, something I've like maybe secretly always wish I had.
Yeah, me too. So I was telling you before we started on the podcast, I literally do ask for a pony every Christmas. It's on my wish list every Christmas. I haven't gotten the pony. But I was a horse fanatic, crazed horse little girl. And I was fortunate enough to be able to be around horses and have some time with horses myself. But it's such a lifestyle and you have to have the right space for them, you know. So luckily you have that space. I saw your pictures on your website and you get to take them out to the beach and ride. It's just beautiful.
I am very, very lucky in that aspect. I have two horses and they're in my backyard. Yeah. But I've always had horses my whole life and they've been my priority. So I hauled my horse, my childhood horse, with me to college.
Oh.
Yeah. And across the country as well. So I'm originally from Minnesota.
Oh, gotcha.
And so when I moved out to Oregon about 10 years ago, my horse came with me. And
absolutely. They're part of the family.
Yeah. So that's definitely a big thing about my books is they all do include horses. And I just don't know if I can write a book without horses in it. So.
Well, we wouldn't want you to, especially I love the idea of fantasy idea of the connection, you know, to the horse. That's exciting. Yes. So it when did you know, Brittany, fun. You were an author? You know, you talked about being a writer as a child, but when was that aha moment? Walk us through that aha moment.
Well, I have always been a reader. Mm-hmm. And in middle school, I really got hooked on a series called the Thoroughbred series. Mm-hmm. And again, it's a young adult book for horse crazy girls. I think there's honestly like 100 books in that series right now.
I can't remember that series. I think I might have read one or two of them myself.
I just loved it when I was in middle school. And I think at that time there were about 15 books and my best friend and I used to just wait for them to get released and we would run and pick them up and just devour them.
That's
and
awesome.
I knew, yeah, I loved them. I knew then that, you know, that was my inspiration for the Red Rock series was the Thoroughbred series. I wanted to write something along that lines for horse crazy girls. And so I think being a reader really brought me into it. But then when I was in high school, my mom got me a journal when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I started writing in that. And I just, that really showed me how much I enjoyed writing about experiences and feelings and emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in high school, I knew that a lifelong goal was to write a book at mm-hmm. some point. But I didn't really take it seriously till I was in my late 20s. And then I took a course, an online course from, I don't know if they still have the course now, because this was at least 10 years, probably about 10 years ago, but mm-hmm. It's called the Institute of Children's Literature.
Well, I'll take a look, and if it's still available, I'll make sure it's on the notes for listeners.
Perfect. And I'll look it up, too, because I'll send you the link if I find it and it's still a course. But it was a really neat course because it was kind of a work at your own pace, and the course was writing for children and young adults.
Mm-hmm.
And it really gave me the confidence to kind of see that, okay, I can do this. And I was, you know, getting good feedback from the instructor. So it gave me the confidence to to start writing on my own. And that course also explained the process that it takes to get an agent and ultimately a publisher too. So that was a really good learning process for me.
Oh, good. We'll visit those two topics here very quickly. But you mentioned you were self-published. So kind of take me through the journey of self-publication for you. Did it start out that you decided you wanted to self-publish, or why did you approach self-publishing? Because for an aspiring author like myself, I'm listening to other authors and kind of gathering what I think I might do when my book is finally done, because it's in the works.
Sure.
And I love picking up those ways. So talk us through that.
Sure. Well, this is actually an area I struggle with a little bit because I would ultimately like to be traditionally published.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I see the advantages and the disadvantages of both avenues after listening to other authors and writers' stories. The nice advantages about being self-published is the fact that you have total control over everything. So I can work at my own pace. You know, my deadlines are my deadlines. They're not, they're not a publisher's deadlines. They're not an agent's deadlines. So I work at my own pace, and I'm a little bit of a perfectionist too. So I don't always like to be rushed through the process, especially writing a first draft.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's nice being self-published. I don't have to answer to anybody else as far as deadlines. I also have total control over my cover.
Mm-hmm.
So I work with a cover designer and give her my ideas, and then she works with me and puts together kind of what I have envisioned. And I know on the traditional published route, a lot of authors don't have a say in what their cover looks like, and so that's a pretty neat aspect. And then I also pick out my own editor and work with them on my story, but ultimately I'm the decision maker in the self-published side, which is a pretty neat thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I would like about being traditionally published is the exposure, the backing of a publishing company, and ultimately the exposure that gives you. Because I think the hardest thing about being a writer is finding new readers.
Very true. It is.
Yeah.
Really.
A lot of effort in that, for sure.
And I've talked to a lot of authors so far, and, you know, before I even started the podcast, and we'll talk about, you know, the social media marketing aspect of it with you. But I found that for me already, and I don't even have my book out yet, but I'm spending a lot of time on social media, getting myself out there.
Yeah.
So it feels like it's a full-time job in that part of it. I love it. I'm one of those kind of people that really, really love it, but not all authors do. It's not like the rewarding part for some people, but I have a blast with it.
And I feel like sometimes you can get like sucked down the rabbit hole of social media.
Twitter, I used to hate Twitter, right? But now I'm like, I love Twitter. Yeah. There's so many authors on there and so many prompts. And I'm like, but I'm not writing on my own work in progress right now.
I know. I agree, though. Twitter is a really good place to connect with other writers.
And I had no idea until just recently how fabulous it is. It's, you know, really become a writer's hub, I think. It's just really fun.
It is. I really like Twitter as well.
So tell me about your cover design. I did get a peek of on your website. So listeners, you want to definitely go to Brittany Joy's website and check out her cover designs. I love the cover design. So how did you find your cover design artist? Were you connected with a network? Did you just hear about somebody? Kind of talk some of us through that are thinking about cover design in our future.
Sure. For sure. Well, so I have used two different cover designers for my Red Rock Ranch series. I use a cover designer. Her name is Melody Simons of eBook Indie Covers. Okay. And because my Red Rock Ranch books were my first two books that I published, and I didn't have especially with the first one, I didn't have a lot of connections with the other writers, and so I just Googled, you know, best cover designer, and I started looking around and finding covers from different designers that I liked, and I ended up stumbling on Melody Simons, and she did a fabulous job. I love the Red Rock Ranch books, and it was really neat because when she was designing them, what she asked me to do was she gave me the website addresses for different stock image sites.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
That she uses. Oh, nice. And she said, pick out, you know, what your main character is going to look like on the cover. And then also pick out what your horse is going to look like on the cover. And so I went through these stock sites and I spent so much time because I was so particular, especially about the horse, because a lot of horse books in movies and books, a lot of the horses are not, like they'll say it's one breed, but if you're a horse person, you know, that's not a horse or that's not an Arab. And so I was just really particular about what I wanted on the cover. And so I got to pick out the horse image and the main character's image, and then she melded them together and created the cover images for both of the Red Rock Ranch books, which was super cool. I really like that. And then I, when I was looking for a cover designer for my fantasy series, Overruled, I use Pinterest a lot too.
Yes. Oh, and another rabbit hole.
I know, it totally is.
I love Pinterest.
It totally is. I love Pinterest.
I love it for everything. Trust me. My husband's like, are you pinning again? Yes, I need to be writing, but man, there's so much good stuff on here.
Oh, I know. But it's, you know, some of it's inspirational, so yes, it's okay. But I'd use Pinterest, especially when I'm getting ready for ideas for cover designs, and I'll create a folder just for that book. And I started just pinning different covers that I liked. Mm-hmm. And I saw a cover, and I can't remember the title of the book now, but I loved it. It was exactly what I would, you know, would draw me into a fantasy series. Mm-hmm. And so I Googled who the cover designer was for that book. And I ended up finding Regina Wamba's website. And she is the one that ultimately made my cover design for Overruled. And then she also designed Overrun, the design for that as well. And her process is really, really cool because she has this, she calls it adult homework. And she has this online form, and it's so fun. So when you do a cover design through her, she has all these questions that you fill out on this form, and it's stuff like, what kind of music did you listen to when you were writing Overruled?
Cool.
And yeah, what was your inspiration? What does your main character look like? Are there any, you know, symbolic things in your book that you want on the cover? It just tons of questions that really like then fuels her creativity to make the cover. And she does the cover 100% and then sends it back to me. Mm-hmm. And I've never asked her for any changes.
Well, they're beautiful. I really love those. And we'll make sure that both of these gals' websites are on show notes. So if you have their websites, for me, Brittany, if you can pass them
absolutely
on.
Because I'd be happy.
Plenty of us that, like, I don't have a design background per se. I have a real clear picture in my head. I have design people that I know, but I think working with somebody that does this for authors is a really good idea. Just like an editor, you know, you mentioned that you had hired an editor. How did you find your editor? Did you do like, you sound fearless to me. You're just going to go on Google and search and find someone. That's intimidating. Or did you get a referral?
Yes. Yes. The editor that I do work with, she was a referral through a Facebook group that I was, that I am part of. Mm-hmm. And I have worked with her on just the last two books.
Mm-hmm.
But she is really detail oriented, and I like, she catches stuff that because I've read the manuscript so many times, I glass right over it, and she, mm-hmm. the stuff she catches is amazing.
Fantastic.
And so, yeah, for I mean, it's definitely nice to get a referral from mm-hmm. somebody that you trust for all of the aspects, the cover designer, the editor, the formatter, for everybody, because you'll get, you know, good feedback from that person, and you will. So it's important. It's definitely important to make good connections.
Mm-hmm.
with other writers and authors, because you share so much information.
Yeah. So what was the name? I mean, is that opened Facebook group authors page that you're on? And can you share it with us that other people can be invited to it or look at it? Or
yeah.
Is it closed?
You know what? I will look it up. I'm writing myself a note right now.
Great.
I will look it
up. I'll make sure that's
listed.
To the
link.
So one of the aspects of this podcast for me is for me to gather resources for myself, but I also want to share. When I started to ask a lot of questions, I'm like, this information is really good information. I know there's other people out there like me that is starting that journey, and they might not know where to go yet, or they might need different resources. So I love to share resources. So
absolutely. I will send you that Facebook group, because the name of it is not coming to my head.
That's
right now.
Okay. We'll get it in there. Don't worry, listeners. That'll be on the show note page. You can jump.
There is one other Facebook group, though, that I would completely recommend for anybody that writes fantasy, especially young adult fantasy. It's called An Alliance of Young Adult Authors. And for short, it's AAYAA. And it is a huge group of young adult fantasy. It's mostly fantasy, but there are other like contemporary authors in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they really share a ton of tips and insights, ask a lot of questions. It's a really good support group, and it's a good way to share promotions, and everybody just kind of supports each other where they can, newsletters and social media and everything too. So it's a cool group.
You didn't know this before you came on the podcast, or you might have heard from, you know, me sending emails. I started a support group just for the authors that are on this podcast, and they have
a
Facebook group too. So you're going to get invited to another Facebook group, and we're sharing with each other.
That's fabulous.
How those networks get started. It's just like one person starts, you know, and that was an idea from one of the authors. She was like, Vicki, will you do a page on Facebook for the authors that have been on the podcast? And I'm like, absolutely. I don't really have time to super monitor, but I'll definitely do that. So you'll be invited in that one, and other authors that are listening.
Oh, yay. I'm excited.
Want to be on the podcast? Let me know so you can jump in and be a part of our party here in the Pacific Northwest. So
wonderful. That would be great. It's so neat to share information too, and because I've had a lot of people help me in the process so far, and are still helping me. But I want to share what I'd love to share what I can help with too.
Yeah, I believe we really are all stronger authors if we have a network of individuals that we can trust that are in the journey with us. They might be farther ahead of that journey, or they might be just starting out. But as much as my family loves me, they're going to always tell me. Great, right? They're never going to be.
Yeah.
Well, my husband can be super honest, but and get away with it. But everybody loves us, you know? And so we need other authors to say, yeah, that plot kind of has a hole in it here and here, you know, or, yes. or think of that. So that's good stuff. And there's a lot of networking that goes on that's important for us. So talking about, you mentioned an agent. And I ask all authors this because it's something I'm playing around with, the idea of not just, you know, I know there's an idea about, you know, self-publishing can eventually move into traditional publishing, and that might be a really great road for someone. But that middle person typically is that agent that starts that process or helps that process. So you said that you would like to do that. Have you started to look for an agent? There's an agent out there listening. There, you know, who knows who's listening to our podcast? They might find you. But what resources are you using, if so, as far as finding an agent?
Well, you know, I definitely have some particular agents in mind. Mm-hmm. I have submitted, actually. I have submitted all 3 of my works to agents and have talked with some and have had full manuscripts read. But ultimately, for one reason or the other, they just weren't right for the agent at that time. Mm-hmm. But I have, like I said, I'm a little bit of a perfectionist. I might be a little bit of a control freak sometimes too.
Oh, I admit it. I'm a control freak. That's just out there. Yeah. I think the first podcast I said that. So I'm not ashamed of that at all.
Pretty funny. Well, somebody's got to be, so...
Workaholic and control freak.
I know. But I keep an Excel sheet. And actually, because I'm active on Twitter, there are literary agents are really, I've noticed, really active on Twitter. And there's a lot of hashtags and contests that literary agents are a part of. And they discover a lot of new authors that way, but it's also a great way to just stumble on different agencies and different agents and then look them up and research them.
Mm-hmm. And the low commitment is what I call that.
Yeah.
They don't know. I'm looking at them. That's cool if I call on them because there's no commitment.
Yes. So you can test the waters and see, you know, who would be a good fit for you, because I do know, because I do have a sales and marketing background. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I am capable of marketing my work. However, I want the agent that's going to take me to a major publishing house, but I don't just want any agent or any publishing house. I'd rather have the control of the self-publishing versus, you know, taking a deal or something that is maybe not going to give me the support that I'm looking for. So
yeah, I hear you. And the reason why I ask is because I think it's something that every author, self-published author, or even if they want to go traditional, they think about this idea. And I think there's a great opportunity for fabulous relationships to build between agents and authors. I unfortunately have had a background, I can't say unfortunately, I've had an amazing background of being in the music industry around my husband, and have had that opportunity to experience agents, managers, and contracts. But that also scares me because I've had that experience. My eyes are very open. So that's where the part of me comes in. I'm like, oh, I think I can do this on my own. I'm probably making every mistake possible, and that's okay. But, you know, I think it's good to talk about it with other authors and what they're doing. And there are some great resources out there. And I think there's some fabulous agents out there too, but you got to have the right one for you.
Yeah, you want them to be right for you, and you want them to be passionate about your story, and you want them to have time for you too.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to think about there.
I just feel like, I don't know, this could be an error and a flaw in my character, but I just really don't think that anybody could ever promote you as much as you can promote yourself, because you are just so, we as authors are very passionate about our work.
So, yeah. I mean, that's why we do it.
Yeah, it is.
We love it.
We do love it. If you don't love it, don't do it. That's what one author told me. If you're not in love with it, don't do it. You can do a million other things.
Absolutely. Yeah, because you're basically pouring your, you pour your heart into a manuscript, so you better love it to then throw it out to the world.
Yeah. Too. So you touched a little bit about marketing with Twitter. You know, we talked a little bit about Twitter. What are some, you have a background, so the marketing aspect probably wasn't as much of an uphill battle as maybe just for some of us other authors. What's a couple suggestions or tips you can give me, an aspiring author, or anybody else listening about marketing aspects for publishing?
Sure. Well, I think one of the most important things is something I actually have already, we kind of talked about a little bit, is in making relationships with other authors in your genre. Mm-hmm. I think as writers, I'd be curious to know what percentage of writers are actually introverts, but I think it's probably 99%.
I kind of have a feeling it is.
I'm definitely an introvert, and I think just about every other writer I've, you know, talked with is an introvert as well. Mm-hmm. So it's harder for us, I think, to reach out and make relationships sometimes, but you need to put yourself out there. And, you know, when I read a good book, I try to then reach out to that author to start a relationship, especially if there's somebody that has a book very similar to mine. And I've met a lot of really great authors, especially authors that write young adult equestrian fiction. Mm-hmm. And we share a lot of information, and that includes, contests. I've been involved with some book giveaway contests with some other young adult authors, and we all help push the contest through all of our social media accounts.
Yeah.
So you get a bigger audience because you're doing one contest with 10 authors versus trying to just use your own social media accounts to push it. And we just share, for instance, I had an author refer me to you for this interview. And she was the one that she sent me an email, and she's like, "Oh, Brittany, I just did this interview with Vicky, and she was so sweet. And I thought of you because you're in the Northwest too. So you should contact her." And I looked at your website. So I think other authors, everybody's, you make some good relationships, and everybody looks out for each other and thinks about each other. When you're doing different marketing tactics.
Yeah.
And it's also a great way to support each other through social media. I mean, the people I have really good connections with, I always try to share, their new works on Twitter and Facebook, or if they have a contest going on, and vice versa too. So I think that is really important.
I love it. The network is such a huge deal. And my listeners are just now really starting to get to know me as they listen to these podcasts. And I've always been a great networker. So even as an introvert, I have mastered looking like an extrovert and in the professional world. And in this podcast world, I get tired because, I'm putting out a lot of energy for an introvert, but it serves so well because I can make these connections with people. And I don't know, and listeners, you probably don't know this, but the authors that I've met, I've stayed in touch with already throughout the podcast and creating this amazing network and meeting so many other listeners and future readers is just exciting. So, and for me, my social media has literally blown up since I started the podcast and meeting other authors. And my husband's like, "Wow, that's crazy." I'm like, "I know, it's just networking. It's just networking on the internet. It's pretty cool."
It is.
Well, we can control it too a little bit.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, if you never put yourself out there, you're never going to find new readers.
True.
And so it is really important to put yourself out there and pretend like you're an extrovert.
Yeah. I tell myself all the time that I took a word this year called, and I just said I was going to be fearless this year. And that's never been something that's been foreign to me in my professional life at work or in my home. I've always been one that starts things. But for writing, the writing for me was always something just for me. And so I had to get to that fearless stage of being able to be willing to put myself out there first and call myself an author. That was the big scary thing. Then let other people know it and then create a Facebook page. And, you know, all these things, it's like saying, I'm doing this. That was scary for me because it's so much easier to write in my journals or free write at home or write all my books and nobody ever gets to read them because, you know, it's easy that way. But that's not what it's about either. So
I know. That's a scary step. I think the very first time you put something out to the world, I think is the scariest because you just, you don't know how people are going to react.
Exactly.
And, you know, maybe for myself, I gained more confidence kind of as I went along. But the first time that I published my first Red Rock Ranch book, that was definitely a scary scary feat because you work so hard on something and you're like, oh, is anybody really going to like it?
Yeah. You know? You do that stat stalking, you know, how many people come to my website? How many people, you know, purchased it? Are there any reviews? Now, listeners, I'm going to say this again. Reviews are authors' lifeblood. So if you read any of the author's books, go to their Amazon, go to their Goodreads, write them a short little review, and it could be two lines, but it can make a big difference. You know, it could be something like, this is a great book, loved it, whatever, but reviews are so important. And I didn't know that years ago. And I started to learn that, started to do reviews as I read books. And then, I totally, honestly, I'm terrified to put out my first real novel because I love it. But putting it out there for people to read, it's like, it's almost two-sided. You want everybody to read it, but then you're scared to death of the critics and criticism. So it's like, it's a little scary.
It is a little scary, but you know what I tell myself and I tell other writers too that, I mean, how many times have you looked maybe on Amazon or Goodreads and a huge name, you know, you can look through their reviews and they get bad reviews too.
Oh, yeah, there are. And that's okay.
Yeah, and it's okay. Like not every book is for everybody. So, you know, my book might be for one person and the next person might not be their thing. And I just have to be good with that. Yeah, so.
True. So you talked a little bit, Brittany, about your inspiration has a lot to do with animals. What other things inspire you? And more importantly, what keeps you going on this journey as an author?
Sure. Well, what keeps me going is just I really love it and I really enjoy writing it. I mean, it is like you said before, don't do it if you don't love it.
Yeah.
It's a major release for me and it's really rewarding. I really enjoy putting together a puzzle for me, writing a manuscript and figuring out the characters and figuring out the plot and then going back and editing it and, you know, tearing certain pieces apart and rebuilding them and ultimately coming up with a story that I get to share with people. And I my favorite thing is talking to readers. I do really love to hear what people think of my stories. I remember every time somebody has, you know, sent me a message, whether it be on Facebook or email, because that just really touches my heart and just makes my day, my week and my year. So
yes, it does.
I do it because I love it. And that's really what motivates me. And as far as my inspiration, I get inspired by a lot of different things, but I think that writers are really intuitive people and we pay attention to things in our lives that maybe somebody else might not pay attention to. And, you know, we watch people, we're people watchers.
One of my favorite pastimes.
Yes,
I have a story for a person who walks by me at the park.
Yes. I know. I love it. I love airports because I travel for my full-time job. And so in airports, I'm always watching people. But yeah, I think we just pay attention to things that other people don't, and they inspire us for, you know, plots, for, you know, plot twists, characters. A lot of my real life experiences do inspire parts of my books, like Lucy's Chance, which is the first Red Rock Ranch book. The opening scene in that book is Lucy's first day working on the ranch, and she has to chase down a steer and does not have a very good experience with chasing down this steer. And I had a different opening scene, actually, for that book. And my husband and I, we don't anymore, but at one point we had a couple of cows. And we had a cow that wanted to, she did not like to be fenced in. And she figured out how to bowl over a part of our fence. And she had a baby with her at that time, a baby calf, and my husband had just left. And I remember I was in my pajamas and I looked out the back of the house and she was in our backyard just eating away everything.
Of course, all your flowers, everything, they're gone.
Everything she was not supposed to be eating. And so I had to chase her and her calf down and round them up by myself in my pajamas. And that ultimately inspired the opening scene for Lucy.
That's fantastic. I love it. Write what you know.
Yes. Write what you know. Yeah. And I keep notebooks everywhere. I keep a notebook in my purse, on my in my bedroom, in my office, out on the ottoman in the living room, because every time I'm inspired by something, I write it down because I will forget it too.
Yeah. I do. I wake up in the middle of the night, have to write something down. I've had inspiration in the most inopportune moments. I'm like, wait, got to stop the conversation. Have to write this down. Yeah. People are getting used to the crazy is what I call it. But like, listen, talking to me, I got to take care of what they're saying.
No, you can't forget it.
No. Yeah. So let's go into your reading, because the listeners love to hear readings from the authors. So why don't you set the stage for what you're going to read? Tell us the title, which title it is, and set the stage a little bit for us. I'm going to sit back and listen and let you read, and then we'll take us out at the end of the podcast.
Perfect. All right. I've got it here and ready to go. So I am going to read the from Overruled. I am going to read the first chapter of Overruled. And Overruled is written in dual perspective. So there's two main characters, Nova and Jade. And the first chapter is written from Nova's perspective. And she has come to the Kingdom of Sterling for some factors that are out of her control. And she is basically trying to survive a kingdom that is controlled by a monarchy that uses magic in ways they probably shouldn't use magic. And so I will start with Nova in her chapter. Arrows hummed, splitting the crisp breeze before colliding with a row of beat-up hay bales. A handful of projectiles sliced into yellow straw, but the majority zoomed over the top, never to be seen again. Nova cringed and mentally noted not to venture outside the academy's stone walls during defense class. unless she had an urge for injury. If you were on the battlefield, you'd all be dead by now, General Stark shouted, her words ricocheting off Nova's back. For a tiny woman, she had a big set of lungs. Her tight silver bun and thick spectacles disguised an angry lady who not so secretly enjoyed sharp objects, chokeholds, and one-armed pull-ups. And again, hit the targets this time, class. I didn't hang them out there for decoration, the general grumbled and waved her hands as though she was being bothered to teach imbeciles. Immediately, a new round of ammunition soared toward the tortured bales. This time, a few arrows pierced the targets and one managed to hit the edge of a red bullseye. Oohs and ahs ensued, mixing with a few grunts as the archer did a little dance, making overexcited pointing motions with his fingers. Pretty impressed with himself, Nova thought, as she watched the shooter continue his celebratory dance for a group of male friends. In fact, Nova was so distracted by his building ego that she didn't notice General Stark sneaking up from behind until she was feet from Nova's ear. Miss Nova Hart, the general started. Nova jumped. I'm not sure what kind of school you are used to, but my defense class is not for observers. You are not going to learn archery by sitting on the sidelines, watching others complete this lesson. I suggest you pick up your bow and join the class. Her sharp instructions caught the attention of surrounding students, and Nova felt each pair of eyes as they turned to analyze her, the new girl. Nova shifted away from the scrutiny and grabbed the wooden longbow at her feet. Sorry, General Stark, I wasn't paying attention. It won't happen again, she lied. Truthfully, Nova was sure it would happen again, but she was trying to slide by without making too many waves during her first week at the academy. Rules were new to Nova, so was the constant regulation and intensity of her classes. Where Nova came from, kids studied what interested them, learned at their own pace. She could name every species of plant that covered the forest floor. She could track a deer for miles, through creeks, up the side of a mountain. She had no trouble identifying the sound of a horned owl or an eagle or a red-tailed hawk, and most of the time, she could even decipher what their screams meant. But in her single week at Sterling's Academy, Nova learned that a student is deemed late for class if only by 1 second, that everyone was expected to follow the rules, and that skills were taught based on what was valuable to the monarchy. Nova pulled a single arrow from her quiver, the long leather pouch strapped across her back, anxious to shoot it away and satisfy the onlookers. She pressed the feathered end against the string, bringing the weapon to her line of sight and pulling it back. Looking straight down the arrow's thin shaft, Nova drew a slow breath and focused on the target ahead until a comment broke the silence. Nice form, the male's voice snickered. Looks like you're getting ready to do a cartwheel. He snorted, laughing at his own joke. His sidekicks followed suit. Nova held the arrow in place, her bicep burning as she kept tension on the string, but she didn't move from her cartwheel position. Instead, she shifted to glance at the kid who felt the need to interject. She caught his eye, confirming it was the almost bullseye hitter, the dance with your pointer fingers guy. Another comment from you, Mr. Sanders, and you'll be cleaning the stables after class by yourself. General Stark barked from behind Nova's back. Go on now, Miss Hart. Let's try to hit a target. But before Nova could get rid of the arrow, she caught Evan purse his lips and scrunch his face into a couple of air kisses, followed by a wink meant for her. Who does this guy think he is? Nova's stomach clenched at Evan's growing ego, and she felt the need to shoot him down, literally. Without a second thought, she tilted her body and released the arrow at a diagonal, barely pausing to aim. The confused but attentive crowd watched the projectile soar to its destination, shattering Mr. Sanders' almost bullseye into pieces, taking its spot on his target. The crowd gasped collectively, and then silence. This time, there were no chuckles as hay pieces zigzagged through the air and floated to the ground. General Stark made an agreeable grunt before she shouted to the class, "And again!" Her command echoed over the silence, and she turned to Evan to add, "I'd suggest you practice before running your mouth like that again." Her spectacles shifted as she raised an eyebrow. Evan responded by closing his gaping mouth. Barely suppressing a smile, Nova reached over her shoulder and pulled a second arrow from her quiver. The other students shuffled back into a straight line, but she held Evan's stare. Clearing her throat, Nova confessed, "I never was very good at cartwheels." The wink following her confession felt nearly as glorious as the jab. The brass bell rang three times, and Nova couldn't wait to escape the confining building, a military training center disguised as an education system. She threw the satchel strap over her shoulder and marched through the hallway, the leather bag bouncing against her back. Pushing open the back door, Nova felt relief as she stepped into the warm afternoon air, ready to put space between her and the school. She couldn't imagine growing up here. She'd barely been here a week, and she was on the verge of going crazy. Once outside, Nova double-checked her surroundings as she cut through the field where she had just learned archery. Fairly certain she wasn't going to get shot by an overachiever practicing after class, Nova stopped and plopped down on her butt. "Ouch," she muttered as she unlaced and peeled off her boots. "I should toss you in the woods." She squinted at the stiff boots in her hands, but knew she wouldn't follow through on her threat. Nova was aware her dad paid good money for a uniform, and she'd wear the stupid thing while she had to. Hopefully not for long. After yanking off her socks, Nova stood inside, her bare feet connecting with the earth. "Much better," she noted, reaching over her shoulder to fumble with her satchel. She wanted to stuff the boots inside, where she couldn't see them anymore. "Need help with that?" Nova's eyes jumped to a tall, lanky guy dressed just as she was, an itchy wool tunic and tall leather boots. "No, I got it," Nova replied, but the questioner ignored her words. Instead, the boy took Nova's boots, opened her bag, and placed them inside. Looking back at Nova, he raised an eyebrow. "You only use your backpack to carry your shoes? I usually haul books around in mine." To prove his point, the boy twisted and exposed his bag, which looked about as heavy as Nova. "I'm not really sure why that's your business," Nova replied with a straight face, "but I keep my lunch in there too." The boy cracked a smile. "You're Nova, right? The new girl?" He reached out for a handshake. After slight hesitation, Nova returned the gesture. "I'm Reese. We have royal history together and defense class." Nova recognized Reese from both classes, but didn't remember him speaking in either. "Yes, I'm Nova, the new girl," she hoped the title never had time to wear off. "You headed home?" Reese nodded toward the rows of houses. His chestnut hair brushed his forehead. "Mind if I walk with you?" Nova took her time answering, unsure of his intentions. No one had been particularly friendly to her since she showed up, but there was something in the way Reese stood before her. His gangly arms hanging at his side, a soft glint in his eye. He seemed harmless enough, and she liked that he didn't question her bare feet. Sure, Nova said, and started walking. Reese followed. "So that was pretty funny in defense class today," he interjected after a few moments of awkward silence. "When you demolished Evan's arrow?" Nova glanced at Reese. "You mean the big-headed guy with the inflated ego who couldn't hit the bullseye?" Reese snorted. "Yeah, that guy. He was awfully lippy." "Agreed," Reese nodded with a smile. "But most everyone puts up with it. Actually, all the girls around here fall at his feet. Most of the guys do, too." "Why?" Nova asked, disgusted. "'Cause he's a shoo-in for an elite position in the Royal Army." And that's so great because Reese shot a sideways glance at Nova. Wow, you really aren't from around here, are you? His tone of question leaned towards amazement rather than ridicule. Nova shrugged. Actually, I was born here, but I don't remember a thing about Sterling. And in my first week back, I can't say that's a bad thing. She situated her thumb under her satchel strap and brought Reese back to her question. So, I still don't get it. Why is that Evan guy such a big thing? He's a stellar athlete, one of the best. And his skills will get him a high-ranking position in the Royal Army after our last year at the Academy, when the Queen mandates jobs. Nova gawked at Reese like he had stripped down his undergarments and was executing a two-step. What do you mean mandate? Like the Queen tells you what kind of job you have to do? He nodded like that was normal. Yeah, that's how it works around here. Everyone works for the Larkspurs. That's crazy, Nova said with her mouth still open. Why would anyone live here if they can't really live, make their own decisions? Lord, I can't wait to get out of here and go back where people are sane. She paused for a second. Sorry, no offense. None taken, I guess. Reese and Nova walked along in a new silence, each processing the other's comments. They passed one small boxy house after the other, nearing the edge of the kingdom before Reese spoke again. You're actually the first new girl I've ever met in Sterling. He whispered, even though no one was around. Ever. His brown eyes widened, accentuating his point, and Nova thought that was the weirdest thing anyone had ever told her. When she didn't respond, Reese continued, I don't mean that as a bad thing. I mean, a new perspective is kind of refreshing. He gave her a lopsided grin, slightly counteracting his odd statement. Well, I'm glad I'm refreshing to someone, Nova responded and managed a small smile. Reese stopped and gestured at a gray cottage. Ivy crawled up the rock walls, obscuring dim windows and nearly connecting with the thatch roof. A few red chickens squabbled and darted out of sight. This is my house, so nice walking with you. Maybe we can make a habit of it? Maybe, said Nova, not wanting to make a habit out of anything that involved Sterling, but also thinking it would be nice to have a friend while she was stuck here. I'm staying over there. Nova raised her arm and pointed to the last house in the row. It looked just like Reese's. Reese smiled over his shoulder, walking towards his front door. I know where you live, Nova. Remember, you're the first new girl that's come to this town in the last 16 years. Everyone knows where you live. He gave her a wave. Meet you here tomorrow morning? Nova didn't think Reese meant to creepily tell her he knew where she lived, but his words gave her goosebumps. Was everyone in Sterling keeping track of her? Yeah, I'll meet you here. Now she was certain she wanted an ally on the inside. That's the end of chapter one.
Yay! I'm totally in love with Nova. She's my kind of girl. Thank you, Brittany. I wish you could read the other part, but we will let readers find you, get your book so they can finish the story. So listeners, find the book if you're hooked and purchase it. Make sure you write a review for Brittany. And we'll probably have you back on the podcast down in the future. So thank you so much for coming and visiting with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on here and for asking such good questions, too. It's really easy to talk with you. So I appreciate it.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to the podcast. We hoped you loved hearing from the author as much as we did. If you did enjoy the author, make sure you find them on social media. Buy their book and write a review. Are you a published author and would like to be featured on the podcast? Visit us at our website to learn more. You can help support the production of this podcast by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Share the podcast with your friends. And most importantly, become a supporter. Supporters receive monthly bonus podcasts and a newsletter filled with tips from our authors. To find out more how to become a supporter, visit our website. And finally, I hope you always remember to enjoy the journey. Until next week, this is Vicki J. Carter saying goodbye.